This is a Carlisle ValueCast, brought to you by the Carlisle Group. ValueCast brings you insights from our One Carlisle Network, providing analysis, data, and observations to help you navigate the global economy and top-of-mind issues in news. The Carlisle Group. Invest wisely. Create value.
Greetings and welcome to Carlisle ValueCast. I'm Chris Ullman, head of Carlisle's Global Communications. Today we are joined by David Rubenstein, Carlisle's co-founder and co-CEO. Welcome, David.
My pleasure.
David, recently you spoke on a panel at the World Economic Forum in Davos on the value of the humanities in an era where science, technology, engineering, and math, known as STEM, are emphasized as critical skills for students to have. On its face, this sounds like pedagogical heresy. What was your thinking?
Well, obviously, since 2006, when a National Academy of Sciences report came forward talking about the importance of STEM education, there's been a big push for STEM education in the United States on the theory that we need to compete with people from other countries who are doing a better job than we are. And I do think that's important for American students to do better jobs in STEM than we probably have been doing. But it shouldn't be at the expense of the humanities. And what I was trying to say in Davos is that, yes, STEM is important, but so is humanities. And we shouldn't feel that everybody should be a STEM major. We should recognize that some people might want to be humanities majors. And if they do so, they're not going to be at a disadvantage when they try to get a job. Because while STEM majors probably do get higher initial salaries than humanities majors, over a period of time it tends to even out. And in fact, what I was pointing out is that many of the people who run large Wall Street firms, thought to be potentially STEM majors perhaps in college, actually are humanities majors. Lloyd Blankfein, for example, was a history major. Jamie Dimon was a psychology major. So it's not the case necessarily that because you major in a STEM area, you're going to be precluded from getting a kind of great high-paying job later on. And in fact, humanities majors may have certain skills that are quite valuable to people later in life.
So what are the skills typically learned by humanities majors, and what impact do they have on a successful career in business in general or a career in private equity in particular?
My experience has been that if you hire humanities majors, they often have a more well-rounded educational background. They also know the importance of what happened before, therefore they understand the mistakes that were made before, and maybe they can avoid making some in the future. They also have the ability to reason. To me, reasoning is one of the most important things you should get out of college and really you need in life. So while you might be, as a STEM major, very good at knowing certain facts and knowing certain math principles and so forth, the ability to reason, to pursue logic, the ability to articulate, the ability to explain why you are taking a certain position is very important. And I think that that is one of the great benefits of humanities education.
So in addition to being chief business strategist and fundraiser over the years at Carlisle, you're also famous for having interviewed hundreds and hundreds of candidates for jobs over the years here. What have you learned?
Well, I've learned what I would do if I were doing an interview, and I was the interviewee, and I haven't been an interviewee for quite some time, but I do tell many students that I do talk to, and young professionals, that you really should be prepared for the interview, and really should come into it knowing what you want to get out of the interview, and trying to make a good impression. And I tell lots of potential hirees, hires that we're going to have, that I look for certain things in an interview, and I try to get that kind of information out of a student or an interviewee. And generally, I think the people who come to see me are pretty well prepared. I am often amazed, though, when I ask somebody who has traveled somewhere to come to the interview, do you have any questions? And they say no. If you've bothered to get an interview with somebody who's a senior person in the firm, and if you can't think of one thing to ask, maybe you don't have the creativity that would be the kind of thing that I would desire to have in our employees. So if you don't really have any questions, make up a question. But there are many other things I do think people often do wrong in interviews. For example, they don't dress appropriately. They don't show up on time. They may not comb their hair. They don't really present themselves well. But generally, in terms of the intellectual part of it, I do think that people who go to interviews should prepare, know what they're talking about, have the right questions, and make sure they ask some questions.
So let's run through your top 10 most important skills or traits for a career in private equity, which you argue are learned or developed through a humanities curriculum. So first, intelligence. So is everyone at Carlisle Rhodes or National Merit Scholar?
No. I am a person who does look at resumes carefully, and in the early days I was often overwhelmed and impressed by people who are Rhodes Scholars, White House Fellows, Supreme Court Clerks. I've learned very often that the resume may hide some other flaws that somebody might have. As a general rule of thumb, I like people who are intelligent, but I don't like to hire geniuses. Geniuses may be great in coming up with E equals MC squared, but they may not be so easy to manage and work with. So I want people who have a high degree of intelligence, but not so high that they are difficult to work with.
Second, ethics and integrity. So are these more important now than ever? And how do you assess these in an interview?
Of course, given the scrutiny that business is under, you need to be more careful than ever in terms of having ethical standards and making sure you have a real moral compass. And it's difficult in a conversation of 30 minutes or 45 minutes to get that out of somebody. But you can ask some questions which would give you a sense of whether these people have high ethical standards. But I do believe in life and generally in one's business career, a high degree of ethical standards and a real moral compass will be, in the end, a great benefit.
Third, a good work ethic. You're famous for always working and getting little sleep. Is that what it takes to succeed at Carlisle?
No, there are some people that may be a little obsessed with working and have been afflicted with the disease of workaholism, and maybe I have that. But I don't really want somebody who's a workaholic necessarily. I do want somebody who recognizes that things that are great generally aren't accomplished 9 to 5, 5 days a week. Now, you can have a very fulfilling life working 9 to 5, 5 days a week, but probably if you're going to really have great professional accomplishments, I think you have to recognize sometimes you have to work late, sometimes on weekends. So I want somebody that recognizes that the job does have a priority, but not somebody that's so compulsive that they don't have anything else in their life.
Four, being a team player. You tout the firm's so-called One Carlisle spirit of collaboration. How important is that, really?
There are some areas where you probably can do things on your own. I guess if you're a golfer or a tennis player, probably you can accomplish a lot on your own. But generally, private equity, and most of business, is a team sport. In private equity, you're working with others, you're depending on others. If you can't get along with others, you're not likely to be that successful in private equity and maybe in other areas of business. So I'm looking for people, typically when I'm interviewing individuals, who I think can work with other people, who have this kind of personality that other people would want to work with. And so that's a very important skill. Being a team player in private equity is really essential.
Five, communication skills. This, of course, is close to my heart. So in an age of 140-character tweets and shortened attention spans, how are communication skills impacted?
Well, of course, I don't know whether if we had tweeting back when Shakespeare was writing, whether we would have the kind of plays that we now have, and whether the kind of communication devices we now have actually lessen one's communication skills rather than improve them. But what I'm looking for are people who know how to write the King's English and actually can communicate in a sentence or paragraph what they really believe in, and also who know how to talk, who know how to persuade other people of what they want. Very often you will find that much of life is about persuading somebody else to do what you want. And so your spouse, your partner, your child, your parent, your sibling, your business partner, your colleagues, you're trying to persuade them to do something you think is a good thing for them, presumably. If you don't have oral skills to do that, I think you're less likely to be successful in business than you might otherwise want to be.
Number six, the desire to make money. So, was Gordon Gekko correct? Greed is good.
I wouldn't say greed is good. I think it's been recognized throughout centuries that greed is not a virtue that somebody should really aspire to. I think it is a good thing to want to measure your success. In the business world, you do measure your success to some extent by the amount of money you might make. But I think that just making money for the purpose of making money, as opposed to doing something useful with it, is not a good thing. So you should want to aspire to be successful in business, and you will measure your success to some extent by the amount of money you make. But greed is not a good thing. I think greed is not only a virtue, it's a vice.
Number seven, the focus on achieving specific goals. So is it better to specialize than to be a generalist?
You know, we do have an era where specialization is very important, and then there are other people who feel that if you specialize too much, you won't get the big picture. So obviously you need a balance. What I tell people all along and what I'm looking for in an interviewee is somebody that wants to specialize in one area, and then after that area is mastered, can expand. So I tell people, when you join a large organization, make one area your own. Make sure anybody that touches that area has to come to you. And when they come to you and they think you've done a good job, they'll come back to you and ask you to do something slightly different, slightly beyond what you were doing, because they have confidence that you can master a subject. So learn one subject well and then let yourself expand a bit.
Number 8, humility. So, there are no egos at Carlisle?
Well, obviously there are egos everywhere in the world, and I think if people were to have no ego, they'd have no self-confidence, it wouldn't be a good thing. But there's a big difference between having an ego and being arrogant. And there's a big difference between bragging a lot and having humility. I think that some humility is always desirable, because nobody is that smart, that talented, that they can brag without failing to recognize the impact it's going to have on their success. I think as a general rule, the people that I know who are the most successful are among the most humble. Very wealthy business people that I know who have accomplished a great deal are actually reasonably humble. Some of the ones who haven't accomplished that much sometimes tend to brag more than maybe they should. But as a general rule, I find more successful are the people who are humble and recognize their own failings and weaknesses.
Number 9, gratitude. Why does it matter?
As a general rule, people conduct themselves with other people in certain ways. And I think when you thank other people that you might be dealing with, or express your thanks for other people who may have helped you, it does tend to show your personality. It does tend to show people the kind of person you are. And I do think that everybody should recognize that nobody has achieved anything by themselves completely. So showing some appreciation for someone who may have helped you or is helping you, I think, is a virtue that some people should follow more.
And finally, number 10, giving back. So whether you have a lot of money or a little or just time, why is that important?
Well, the Greek word philanthropy really meant loving humanity. It had nothing to do with billionaires writing large checks to charities. So you can be a philanthropist and you can give back by giving your time, your energy, your ideas. You don't have to have money necessarily to be a philanthropist to help other people. I do think it's a normal human instinct to want to help other humans. That's one of the ways we differ from other mammals, perhaps. We really want to help people who may not just be relatives of ours. So I do think that's a good virtue and something that people should understand, that if you are successful in your business career, you will have more money than probably you really should be spending on your personal consumption needs. Give it back to others. Help other people. And if you don't have a lot of money, give your time, your energy. I think you'll feel much better about your life if you do so.
David, thanks for sharing your thoughts on the benefits of a humanities education and why those skills are important in any job or in a private equity environment.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, go to our website at www.carlisle.com. This has been a Carlisle ValueCast podcast.